It's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, reach out to us, crushperformance.com. Sign up for our newsletter, get our podcast, and stay on the cutting edge of human performance as we work every single week to bring you the very, very latest information. Follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on all other social media platforms, on Instagram, Facebook, and our cool new YouTube channel. Just search out Crush Performance, that's Crush with a K. Hey, latest on our YouTube channel, by the way, we just posted the latest animation of the Crush Report, which we've been doing quite regularly here lately. It's a sleep debt animation with Sherry Ma, and she's totally loving it. She has been animated for the first time, and Sherry's been on the show a number of times. Just great information from Sherry there on YouTube. Go to Crush Performance and you can get our latest animation on sleep debt. So there's so much going on. Today we have a really big show. You know, in 2019, one of our themes is organizational performance, and it is a tall order to wrap up and deliver clear messages on organizational performance. What is it all about? Well, there's so many factors involved, but sometimes it comes down to the basics and simplicity. Today, we are going to be joined by Graciela Thake, CEO of Optimization Hub, and Daniel Kulikowski, the COO and co-founder of Optimization Hub, an organization out of Australia that is working around the globe now to help people better understand what it truly takes to perform at the highest levels. I first came across Optimization Hub when I was presenting in New Zealand to their National Baseball Federation and working with some of their international sports. I got a chance as well to get involved and get inside of the incredible rugby culture there in New Zealand. And I met a couple people and administrators who were involved in this thing called Optimization Hub. So we started talking about it, and it is truly, truly smart stuff. Very insightful, incredibly logical, and to tell you the truth, all powerful. Their approach to human performance is very unique and something that's very, very needed. They talk about how fast the sporting industry has developed. If you go back to the professionalization of the business world, for example, for decades and decades, they have been developing professionals inside of their organizations internally and putting a lot of resources into developing those individuals. Well, if we go over to the sporting industry, the professionalization of sport really started happening big time in the 80s and 90s. And I don't think we've caught up with everything we need to do to help our athletes cope with this crazy, high-paced world of high-performance sport. That's what they talk about. They talk about cool things like optimization. They have really dived into this concept of resilience. What is resilience? I don't think we understand it enough. We're going to get to that today as well, and how you can tie it all together as an organization or as an individual to help push performance forward. An all-important conversation coming up with Graciela Thake and Daniel Kulikowski from Optimization Hub. Stick around for that, everybody. It's going to be a good one. Con man, so much going on in sport. Listen, everybody, if you've been following baseball, this is a very, very interesting time. They're talking about rule changes that are going to significantly change a game that's been steeped in tradition. We're going to have a opening day extravaganza coming up where we'll cover all the rule changes that are being addressed by Major League Baseball and the Players Association. But a very interesting time because, listen, rule changes like this in a major sport will get other sports thinking about their rules and ways they can improve their game, because there is great competition between these professional sports to gain fans, to gain the attention of fans, the loyalty of fans. And every sport is looking for ways to engage and make their fan base happy. That's what baseball is trying to do here. So we're going to watch that with great interest. We're also going to watch how it impacts the other major sports. We'll be talking about that later this spring for sure. And if you've also been watching, Tim Tebow with the Mets has been sent down. Of course, Tim Tebow, NFL quarterback, makes a transition into baseball. Connor, it's got me thinking a lot lately about multi-sport athletes and athletes that had success changing from sport to sport or playing multiple sports, even at the professional level, or those who tried to make the transition and weren't so successful. John Smoltz right now is really doing well in professional golf, which I think is really interesting. If you read the articles on him, he spent a lot of time between his ESPN gig and developing his golf game, coming off, what, 20 years as one of the best pitchers in baseball. It's pretty interesting to watch, and we're going to talk about this in April. Athletes that have tried to or have made the change to another sport. It's way harder than you think. Think of Michael Jordan. Just look at the struggles Tebow is having. He is dedicated right now to baseball, even though he's getting some pretty substantial interest and offers from these new football leagues, the AFL and the XFL, which is on its way. So we'll see how he does. We'll see if he sticks with baseball, because it's truly not as easy as it looks. Look at Jordan, for example. Though there are those athletes who have transcended multiple sports, I think it has a lot to do with development. We're going to get to that in April. We're going to look at athletes who have tried other sports and either succeeded or failed or struggled. But we're going to have a look at it and see what we can learn from those who have dared to take on the challenge of a second sport. And of course, if you've been following the news lately, you've heard about the college admissions scandal. It got me thinking about college sport. And a tweet that came out from our good friends at the Florida Baseball Ranch earlier this week that I just had to respond to. Randy Sullivan and the guys there are top shelf for sure. You can follow them at FL Baseball Ranch. And here's the tweet that they sent out. The college recruiting process is out of control. Guys are expected to be ready at 14. Bigger, more mature players are committed as 8th and 9th graders, only to have their commitment broken days, weeks before their signing day. Randy continues to write that a 13-year-old came in last night saying, "I'm going to be a dude, mark my words." Listen, you don't know if a 13-year-old's going to be a dude, so I had to respond to this. Here's what I wrote. Randy, I agree with you 100%. Parents and players, beware. Keep your expectations realistic. Do not specialize early. 10 to 12 years on the bottom end for sure. Find a great program, dive in, and enjoy the ride, because it's a process that takes years. Getting better is fun if you do it the right way. That was my response to Randy's tweet. I don't typically write back to social media posts, but I had to on that one because he's so right. It is out of control. People, we have to take our time when it comes to development. I think we rush it too much. It comes back to the whole specialization conversation, right? I mean, we just have to make sure that our athletes are enjoying sport through those critical developmental ages. And there are windows of opportunity in terms of development, very, very distinct windows that have to be addressed in the process of developing an athlete over time. You cannot rush it, especially when it comes to strength. Listen, the weight room is a very dangerous place to be. You do the wrong thing at the wrong time, you can totally crush future potential. So proceed with caution. Know thyself. And that brings us to the crush question of the day. So my youngest daughter the other day called me a binger. And I'm going, what the heck is a binger? I am certainly, whatever it is, not a binger. But she goes, Dad, you've been listening to Queen nonstop since you watched Bohemian Rhapsody. And so I got thinking about this. Okay, I watched Bohemian Rhapsody. It is a great movie. The casting, the acting. I don't know how accurate that story is in terms of what really happened with Queen, but what a cool story. I was never a big, big Queen fan back in the day, but it was always there and I always did like their music. But I watched the movie and it got me interested in going back and listening to their music. So I downloaded a bunch of it. And yes, I guess I've been listening to it quite a bit. So my daughter calls me a binger. Now, I thought about this for a second, and going, that's not really a word I would use to describe myself. So the text question of the day, everybody, get to us. You can write to us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. You can write to us on Facebook. I'm going to post this question there as well, Crush Performance. Or you can text us, 101260 is the text number. Standard text rates do apply. But if you had one word to describe yourself, what would it be? Get to us. I'd like to hear what you guys have to say and see what you think. If I were to go and think of a word to describe myself, let me think about it. I'll get to it next segment. But let us know, everybody. Hey, coming up after this break, we're going to talk to the good people from Optimization Hub about how you can improve not just your personal performance, but the people around you and maybe even your organization. Stick around, an important conversation coming up right after this. This week on Crush Performance, a must-listen episode as we go deep inside the All Blacks culture with James Kerr, author of the Crush must-read book, Legacy, what the All Blacks can teach us about the business of life. James takes us behind the curtains and shares the rituals, stories, and strategies that help create and maintain one of the most successful performance cultures ever. It's been said that culture trumps strategy every time. Get set for a conversation that will change the way you think, act, and lead this week on Crush Performance.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Kerschell here, the con man behind the glass. Hey, we're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, hook up with us. Sign up for our podcast. Get our newsletter. Go to crushperformance.com. We'd love to have you on board. Our mission is to keep you on the cutting edge of human performance, no matter what it is you're doing. If you're an athlete, developing athlete, professional athlete, if you're a parent, teacher, or coach, if you're running a business, the principles of human performance are constant across the board. You really just need to understand what they are and then apply them to your craft. And it's not as hard as you might think. And it's pretty much all we talk about. So go to crushperformance.com, sign up for our newsletter, get our podcast, and follow us on social media. On Twitter, at Jeff Crush, on Facebook, Instagram, and on our YouTube channel, just search out Crush Performance. I suppose one of the first things you need to do in order to move yourself forward is understand yourself. The question of the day that came around because of an accusation made by one of my daughters who called me a binger. And you know what? I started thinking about this. I am a binger. I'm a binger, there's no question about it. The conversation started because I watched Bohemian Rhapsody. And I can't say that I was a big, big Queen fan back in the day. Queen was always there, enjoyed their music. But that show, that movie, that casting, the acting is just tremendous. I don't know how accurate it is in terms of what really happened with Queen back in the day. But it's just a tremendous show. If you haven't seen it, I would recommend seeing it. But then, of course, I started getting back into the Queen music. I went online and started getting some of the music just to sort of remember what they were all about. And they were a tremendous band back in the day. But I started listening to Queen. And now I just find myself, that's all I'm listening to. And my daughter accused me of being a binger. Now, that's not the first word that I would use to describe myself. But that's what my daughter called me, and I started thinking about it. Huh, what happens when there's a plate of cookies out there? Well, guess what? Binge. You come across a new recipe, a new great recipe. I tend to overcook at a movie or music or a great book. I really, really binge read. So I guess it's kind of accurate, but it sort of spurred on our question of the day. What word would you use to describe yourself? Okay, so if I were to pick a word for me personally, one word that would truly, I think, maybe most accurately describe me, I would have to say loyal. I've got this unwavering parameter for loyalty. And I think that's something that I guess I'm quite proud of, but it's just one of my traits that I think drives who I am and I suppose how I go about my business. So what word describes you? Let us know. You can get to us. 101260 is the text line. Standard text rates do apply. You can also get to us on Twitter. Respond to my question. It's going to be on Twitter and on Facebook as well. I'd really like to hear how you guys, in one single word, would describe who you are or what you're about. It's kind of tough, actually, but have some fun with it and let us know. Speaking of which, one of our main missions here in 2019 is to talk about organizational performance. And for any organization looking to improve performance, you have to know yourself as an organization, which also means you have to know the people within your organization. You have to have clear and concise goals and objectives. You have to set expectations so you can have accountability. And then you have to support performance. And supporting performance is a little more difficult than you might think it is when you really get down to it. So how do you push organizational performance forward, building cultures, supporting individuals and teams inside of your organization? Well, I'm very, very happy to introduce Graciela Thake, the CEO of Optimization Hub, and Daniel Kulikowski, the COO and co-founder of Optimization Hub. Graciela and Daniel, welcome to Crush Performance. So glad to have you guys on today.
Fantastic. I've got to say I'm so enthusiastic about being on your show today. We're just thrilled to be here. The Optimization Hub, you know, represented by us, obviously, is co-founders today. So thank you, Jeff, for having us.
My pleasure. So I first heard of your program when I was actually in New Zealand working with their national baseball program. And I actually got to be lucky enough to spend some time around the great rugby culture in New Zealand, which was fantastic for me. I met one of your affiliates there. Who walked me through your program, and I was very, very intrigued. Graciela, maybe you could give us a little bit of your background and how this whole great, platform that's called the Optimization Hub came around.
Well, it's a bit similar to yourself. I've got to say that I was immersed in New Zealand rugby culture for a number of years, and my background is Italian Maltese. I came from a background of forensic psychology, so I moved from Australia when I was a year old. I was born in Mumbai, and I've lived kind of all over the world. I come from a diplomatic background and have spoken in various different places around this whole topic of resilience, leadership, and social development. So in New Zealand, similar to yourself, as I said, I had a background of getting thrust into rugby and learning about it because my background had come from football, that we call it in the EU, known as soccer everywhere else. And we, you know, learnt a lot about our sort of our teams and our team sports through our nation sport, which was rugby in New Zealand at that stage. I was heavily immersed in corporate after I left forensics. And so my interest in sport is my interest in human development. And I think the World Economic Forum have coined it really well right now that the next number one issue in the world that we're going to be dealing with and that where our industries are going to be growing is how we can develop approaches for the mind to speed up and keep up with the speed of life now and the performance demands on us. So it's been a natural attrition to me to move towards sport from a background of both, you know, working with corporations and also working in corrections and government departments. And my passion is obviously that sport harbors some of our youngest professional population.
Graciela, we're talking with Graciela Thake, the CEO of Optimization Hub. You can check out their great information at theoptimizationhub.com. I really like this bridge, Graciela. You know, we tend to look at sport as right now the landscape globally. What a great opportunity right now in sport. There's so many resources going into the sporting platform now and athlete player development. There's so many opportunities now for athletes. But I still think there's plenty of work to do, isn't there?
There is a lot of work to do, Jeff. I think we've had this conversation offline, and I'm happy to, you know, to explore it again online. I think the key is that we have a very young population that professionalizes very early into sport, and so we sit around and we crack the whip and we think, wow, you know, they're performing really well. Mentally, they're just not keeping up, and the system that we run at the Optimization Hub is a system run nowhere else in the world like ours. So I can say that unequivocally because it's a system that was developed 17 years ago in response to needs in corporations. So 17 years ago, corporations were talking about engagement, leadership development. They were looking at the whole life balance issue. And resilience was not even a word that was tossed around too often. And I started to bring it into our programs. And we drew up a number of programs that were delivered and actually began to become some of the best known for what they were doing, developing teams of up to 500 to 700, you know, just teaching them leadership development through teaching them resilience. And I think, you know, the sad indictment is that we forgot about sport when it professionalized itself. When it professionalized itself, what happened was we started to see that our athletes were, of course, earning, and they were doing really well. And we saw our heroes, like gladiators, just winning out there for us. But what we didn't examine was how young they were when they went in. And, you know, we look at our 13s, 14s, 15s, who then dedicate themselves to a sports career. That's where they want to go. When they professionalize, they start to obviously get very involved in just the sports routine. So I think that's where I'd hang my hook up on our last conversation and say, you know, that's the key, is that we forgot about how young they are, and we also forgot about the speed of life and the change that's happened with, you know, automation of everything and the demands upon both the athlete, their mind, and their speed and accuracy. Because we've kind of over-scienced everything else, but we've left the mind out of it.
I agree, Graziella, and I really like this idea of exploring other platforms. If we look at the business world, as you mentioned, for example, they are light years ahead in terms of developing and taking care of the professionalization and the people in their organizations. But now that you sit back and think about it, you're absolutely right. We have all these young professionals coming in, earning very, very large amounts of money early in their careers, and it moves so fast. We haven't quite gotten to the same place the business is in terms of handling that development. I like this concept.
Well, you know, I think it's not, you know, a rocket science approach, but it's definitely a needed and necessary approach. And I think that sports responding to it by investigating mental health, and there's this big umbrella around, you know, okay, so what is mental health? If we really look at it, you're looking at the ability for an individual to master both the demands, on themselves, and the demands on their mind and their brain's capacity to keep up on a daily basis and to cope, the capacity to cope and engage with things, to have the behaviors trained in to respond to situations without reacting to them. Now, within industry, we train that in really early, and that's become, you know, this very fashion-saddened thing to do since the 90s and the turn to looking at engagement. And so since, 2003, we've been heavily involved in engagement and balance and health and wellness for most of our corporations. Sports kind of tricked along because we had this assumption, because we're using our bodies, we're sweating, we're eating the right foods, that we're being really healthy. The demands, though, on a young mind and a young career path at such an early age, and then the habit that's formed around just that one career, that one choice, can lead to the fallout that we're seeing now, where we have young people churning and burning out of sport at a very young age, because sport's only realistically giving us a 3 to 5 year career pathway. And we really have to digest that right now. 3 to 5 years. If you're lucky, you might get 6 or 7 out of it. And there are some of those that, and the very, very top of the top, might really make a lifelong career out of it. We don't have that for everybody.
Yes, it is very rare. We're talking with Graziella Thaik, the CEO of Optimization Hub out of Queensland, Australia. Speaking of Australia and speaking of sport, you know, I think the global sporting world has watched Australia in awe. And if you look at the population base in Australia and the feats that that country has accomplished on the international sporting stage, it is fascinating study in terms of human performance. To be right there in the hub of that, that has to be an interesting spot to be, Graziella.
It's an amazing place to be. I've got to admit that I came back to Australia, 3.5 years ago with a perspective of we are the top of the world in sport, and then a bit of a sadness and recognition when I caught up with my co-founder a couple of years back and actually started to hear the stories that were coming out of sport. And that's where we catapulted into founding the Optimization Hub, because I had no awareness at that point of how severe or how deep the issue was. So yes, we have a thrive mentality, but we're also seeing a lot of wounds in sport. And hence, we've got the Institute starting to spend so much time on trying to understand mental health. We're kind of sitting at the other end. When we sat down and examined it, we sat at the other end and said, so how can we prevent this from happening, and why is it happening? And so I'm, at that point, I might handball over to Daniel Kulikowski, and handball's a great word to use because he plays one of our Australian-only sports, AFL. He hailed from the south and from Port Adelaide. And he, had a really interesting story in sport because he had transitioned out with a lacerated kidney and punctured lung and, 19-odd concussions. He'd done well in terms of managing his money, but came out of sport with the same sense of, well, I've got, some things I can go on with, but then started to see the effects on his, his colleagues coming out of sport not doing so well. So Dan will tell you a bit of his story there.
Yeah, Gracie's touch point on it. So in 2013, I transitioned out, and through being involved with the Optimization Hub and touching point with Graziella, I've started to realise the importance of harnessing your mind and what the mind can actually do. Because we have, as Grazi touch-pointed, concentrated too much on the science side of things and not much on the mental. Speaking from the research that we've experienced now, a lot of that effect goes down to the individual's motivations. And as a young athlete, you're always aspiring to be an athlete, and that's your only goal. And there's nothing further than that. So once it comes to your end of your career, you get chopped whether it be your performance or an injury or things like that, you get chopped and then you've got nothing else to aspire to be because you were an athlete and that was solely your identity. You had nothing further. So the importance with what we're doing and the programs we run, it's about the individual understanding that there's other things to life than just solely the sport, but sport's an important vehicle for the education.
Yeah, and Daniel, we're talking with Daniel Kulikowski, who is a co-founder of Optimization Hub. Daniel, this has to happen during the sporting career. It's not something you wait until the career is over to attack. This is something that needs to be set out through the process, correct?
Oh, correct, 100%. Throughout the sporting career, and the sporting career starts at such a young age. So we commercialize sport at 14, I think, Godzilla, is that right? Around 14. Yeah,
so around 14, we start to have our professionals. You know, in gymnastics, for instance, you've got teams from 8 to 21 working together. So, you know, you have professional teams starting to compete both, you know, at an Olympic or a state level. They start to move into the state representations. And then by 16, you're representing possibly at a national level.
So with that being, you need to start educating the youth from such a young age. So we're starting to deploy educational programs as well throughout schools and looking towards universities, but using sport as the vehicle, because a lot of people go towards sport as the new hub, the new community, and it's a community builder.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. We're talking with Graciela Thake and Daniel Kulikowski from Optimization Hub. Well, let's talk about the program itself. When you go online and you look at the program and dig a little deeper, there's a lot of really cool words. Engagement, improving performance, resilience, taking charge, all these cool concepts. If somebody were to step into the Optimization Hub, what is the feel that you guys are looking to emulate?
The absolute feel is, one, the vibrancy of culture and the thrive, not try to survive sport mentality. Sport was designed to be fun, so we partook in sport so that we were, you know, going out there to be energized, we enjoy it, and now it's a professional, you know, it's a profession that you can choose. And we want people to say, how good is sport? The areas that we became concerned about when we did a meta-analysis of the research were that the risks were around balance and engagement, identity, inability to deal with change, unable to take responsibility for certain things because everything was automated. So when that automation went away, then a feeling of loss and grief, and transitions and difficulties around transition. So if you were to come into a program, I mean, our programs make a promise that in 6 to 9 hours, we can build you in, you know, in true resilience and to be able to master your mind for focus and for the ability to perform at your best and take charge of your future. And we know that, you know, there are a lot of different things that you can go out there and do, but this is a training system. It's the same system that we've used in 26 multinationals to develop top CEOs and leaders. And so we've delivered that back into sport in bite-sized chunks, and it's working like a dream. So we're delivering back into young people who are entering sport and who are professionalizing, who are wanting to learn how to manage their minds and to get a bit of Ventolin going in their brain and be able to get that space, so that they can think clearly and fluidly, and therefore they perform really well, but they're also managing other tasks outside of sport really well. And so we're seeing robust comparisons back to us that are showing us that they're performing even better going through the programs, and they are mastering tools and skills in sport much more quickly because the clarity of both their behavioral recognition and their mental recognition are in sync. We also have programs for women in sport because, you know, women in sport is a new and robust and growing area. And there are different tensions and challenges for women in sport. And so those tensions and challenges are around both sport management, family management, professionalization or partial professionalization for women. So we have a short program that we offer for women in sport. We have one for coaches as a forgotten athlete because we've acknowledged that coaches and referees have not had the skill base, you know, in the past, to be able to deal with the multitude of issues that they're forced to deal with because it's simply not offered. Often it's the technical skills of getting performance out of an athlete, not of managing the human being and not of managing huge groups of human beings and, you know, the complexities there and being able to deliver partly what we're delivering in the athletes programs back into their coaching, which has actually seen huge, huge degrees of positive effect now feeding back to us. The other thing is the transition out of sport that has obviously not been dealt with so well. So we do have an approach there. We have a fantastic program for transitioning out of sport, which we offer to athletes well before they transition. So it's sort of planning ahead and teaching skills that will optimize your performance, but also grow your ability to who pick up on the things that you can while you're in sports. You've grown a profession as well.
Yeah, I really like it. Graziella, you know, you talk about resilience, and you mentioned it earlier that it's a word that wasn't even around in the 90s. You guys talk about resilience. I wonder if the people have the same definition or the same feel for resilience as you guys do there at Optimization Hub. When the people at Optimization Hub talk about resilience, what does that mean there? And I wonder if it's the same as maybe some of our athletes are in the trenches right now.
Well, you know, that's a really great question. It's one I'm plowing through a PhD question on at the moment, because I'm really fascinated at the diverse ways we can speak about resilience. So we talk about resilience diversity. We talk about the ability for resilience is the ability to bounce back, but also to have an ability to deal with a multitude of different situations and to deal with change through both personal balance and through systemized approaches to being able to deal with anything that comes up that's a surprise. It's a right brain action formula. You know, we were really moving to say you can be creative with anything. And the importance of what we do is that resilience for us is the ability to problem solve, to have strong identity, to have balance, good self-direction and management skills, and to be able to work with awareness and drive. And we use this using foundations of psychoneuroimmunology as well as psychology and cognitive behavioral psychology, but also practical formulations taken out of organizational and management theories, so that we have a system that grows what resilience is now represented by in this new era, in a very automated era, and the demands upon both the professional, the athlete, and the human being.
Graziella, Daniel, such great stuff. I like this entire concept of resilience. I think it's so important. I'd like to get into this more. If you guys can hang on over the break, we got to cut out everybody. When we come back, we're going to talk about resilience. What exactly is it, and how can you use it to your benefit? Stick around, everybody. More from Optimization Hub right after this on Crush Performance.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here. Listen, if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us. Crushperformance.com is the website. You can write to us there. You can also search us out on Twitter at Jeff Crush, and on all social media platforms. Just search out Crush Performance, Instagram, Facebook, our YouTube channel. Check us out there. And if you do have a question or a topic you'd like us to investigate, let us know. We've dedicated segments, even entire episodes, to your ideas. We love them all, appreciate them all, so do get to us if you can. Today, a very, very important show as we delve into one of 2019's Crush Performance themes, which is organizational performance. And it all comes down to human performance, of course. If your organization's going to be successful, the people inside of your organization have to be successful. And in order to do that, you have to create an environment where they can be successful. Does it sound complicated? Well, it's actually not. I'm really, really glad to have with us today Graziella Thake and Daniel Kulikowski from Optimization Hub. Just in the previous segment, we were just finishing a great conversation on resilience. I really love the human side of this whole story, Graziella, but I don't think resilience is understood as well as it should be.
It definitely isn't. I mean, you know, and again, I'd just like to include Daniel in this conversation, because resilience for an athlete has often been the physical. I mean, and Daniel can reflect back to his own training and what he's seen. And sometimes we throw a whole row of things, a raft of things at athletes, expecting them to pick it up. And we say, well, why aren't they picking that up? Why aren't they doing this? All these opportunities are in front of them. You know, if you're not trained sometimes to do something and you're young and you've got an environment around you that's, you know, basically demanding you to just perform, then resilience becomes very different for you. It becomes just coping, as opposed to being able to foresee the demands in life. Dan, what are your views on resilience? I mean, we have a global view for OHUB, but
we do. Resilience, everything Graziella touched pointed on. She's currently doing a PhD on defining resilience and mental health. So really, I'll be stabbing in the dark to really define what my thoughts are about resilience. But as Graziella touch pointed on professionalisation and performance-based, we are currently transitioning out of that as a athlete environment, because we're trying to now congregate into the mind, because sports scientists are really maxing out human potential and performance side. So now I guess the next step, the new sexy term, is your mental resilience and also what is mental resilience? How do you control your mind? So I think that's the next big thing for athletes and the next cool, sexy thing for athletes being. And touching point on the whole human aspect is we as an organisation, we see the athletes as people before we see them as athletes. I think that's a major thing here at the Optimization Hub.
Yeah, Daniel, it's interesting to hear your take on it. You know, I've unfortunately dealt with athletes such as yourself where the careers have ended prematurely. It is a tough, tough road to take. And some of the data that we have and you guys have posted on your website is absolutely alarming. You know, some of the information, if you guys were to check out the optimizationhub.com, some of the global data is actually alarming when you talk about 20% of athletes experiencing psychological difficulties, or the fact that, you know, in Norway, 43% of athletes experience anxiety or depression. 74% have adverse nutritional behavior, which is 100% preventable. And one of the ones that were really surprising to me and alarming and something that's sort of dear to my heart is the fact that in the U.S., in the United States, college sports, suicide ranks fourth as a fourth leading cause of death, and it's higher in men than in women. And in Australia, 73% of athletes who transition from sport with mental health issues, identity issues and addictions. And from the athlete standpoint, I'm sure you can relate to that. And another reason that programs like this are so, so important, Daniel.
Oh, well, 100%. In an athlete environment, you're not really privy to all the information you need. You're always getting taught about your performance, your heart rate, your stamina, hydration and everything. So I guess as an athlete, you're not really taught balance, engagement, how to really identify yourself. You're not adjusted to change. You don't really have your transitional skills on board. There's not really a balance in life because you don't understand your roles within the life. So you're not really self-aware. All you really know is basically your sport, your sporting environment, the way you've grown up. All you've been known as is the high-performing individual. There's a lot of stigma around mental health. And what is it? I think we haven't really defined it, as Graciela said, because what is mental health? You got to question yourself that. Like, what is it? A lot of people are saying it's bad or is it good? I think we haven't really defined the real term and concept of what mental health is. And speaking as an athlete, as a past athlete, if I had these tools during my career, I think I would have been more focused and balanced and would have been able to succeed far further than what I did throughout my career in understanding throughout the injury when I was isolated and I was by myself. I didn't really have people around me. That was me understanding it now. But back then, I was really insular, really kept to myself when I was injured, because you're basically by yourself when you're injured. You're away from the team. So it's about being adaptable, understanding who you really are and knowing what to do.
We're talking with Daniel Kulikowski, the co-founder of Optimization Hub. And Daniel, how important would it have been back in the day if we were to turn back the hands of time to not only have all those pieces in place, but also a long-term and even strategic exit plan, career exit plan, even though you were early in your career, but to know that there's some form of system for exiting sport, how much pressure would that take off, even a healthy athlete? I think, you know, if we look at anxiety and depression in sport right now, we're at all-time highs, and anxiety is ranking up there as one of the leading causes of injury in professional sport. We're not doing enough about it. But I think, you know, just having a strategic plan for athletes in their current state, but also looking forward to what their lives are going to look like after sport, could really, really ease a lot of the issues that athletes are facing on a day-to-day basis, don't you believe?
Oh, 100%. I'm 100% in on that one, and Graciela can touch point on that as well. As a past athlete, if I had these tools and knowing what I know now, through going through the program and being more aware, understanding my roles better and being more motivated, understanding what people tell me, whether it's true or not, understanding these little things make a huge difference on an athlete's career, but also the human being. Doesn't matter what level of athlete stage you're at, if you understand all these things, you can have a longer duration of a career.
And just think of the impact. You know, I think some of the athletes that are dealing with stress and anxiety, the impact on their social lives or their married lives or their personal lives, sport, it comes back to that holistic human thing. Graziella, just to sort of, as we wrap up here with the last few minutes, could we talk a little bit about what the program is actually, what does it look like? What is it about? How does it work? And what are some of the results you guys, I know you've touched on it already, but some of the results you've gotten, the results are absolutely unbelievable that you guys are getting, but what does the program look like?
Right, so the program looks like this. How we work with teams and how we work with individuals can vary, and we work with different sports. So we work with 27 different sports. Primarily when we're working with an athlete, we will go into a sport and we'll deliver a workshop, and then we will deliver a series of one-on-one that can be delivered either as a group or as one-on-one experiences, depending on the transition. Or say if you've got a top national team, you're not going to have them together all the time. If you've got teams that are at different levels, then you will have them together and you have the opportunity to go into training and work with them. Our phase courses are around about 6 to 9 hours. So there's a variance between the coaches' programs and the women's programs. You experience both the trainers. So we use a thing called momentum-based training. We have 5 trainers in a room with a team en masse or with referees or coaches en masse. And we deliver both the content, but we also deliver workbooks. So we have a system that we run, and that gives us quite a number of performance check-ins. So we also run performance maps over that system so that we're aware of where performance is variable, and we do testing around resilience using the WHO international level tests. So we use World Health Organization standards tests. So we test pre, during, and post. And what we've factored in is that our athletes are transient and they're moving around a lot, and they also have a number of demands on their schedules and times. So we provide something that locks into the schedule of the sport that they're in. So how you'd feel as an athlete is it would systemically fit in with whatever you were doing, and we would fit in with your times of training and your sport, so it's deliverable to you at those times. If the sport itself hires us and we're working with the team itself, then we lock into the team schedules and times. It only takes roughly around about 4 weeks to 6 weeks to get through one of our programs. Now, we don't drop and run. We do have an online platform and we have a number of things, and I loved listening to you going through all our statistics because the meta-analysis was fantastic. You know, when we went ahead and did it and studied sport, our motto is to work alongside sport, and we don't want to threaten anything that sport's already doing. The Optimization Hub is just that. We optimize what's happening already. We're there as a systemic program that can operate just beside sport. It's athlete-centered, athlete-focused, and it offers athletes and sport itself the skills which will improve both performance and improve the lives of athletes themselves. So the experiences that the athlete goes through, as I said, the program, there's around about 148 different tools that the athlete learns throughout that program process. And we are master trainers, so we're teachers. We're teachers of the program.
I really like it. Graziella, you mentioned a couple of interesting things there that I have to ask now. We've opened the Pandora's box. But you said something that's very, very...
Sandy would like that.
Yes, exactly. She sure would, wouldn't she? Hey, listen, you mentioned something that's very interesting and very, very true in today's day and age of free agency and the athlete market, especially in professional sports, the transient athlete. You know, we talk about getting into environment and the influence of environment. And, you know, from the business sector... they hire their employees and their executives, and those executives and those employees, they sit into an environment or get into an environment. And that environment is really designed, as you mentioned, to help them prosper and grow and build and help the business. For the athlete's world, isn't it interesting? Because a player could literally, in the span of 2 or 3 years, play for 2 or 3 or more different organizations where the environments could be totally, totally different. So I like this idea of arming the individuals with knowledge that they can guide themselves with. But how powerful would it be if the organizations got on board where athletes or executives or people come into the organization and they get all of this support? It's a different animal, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, we're almost dealing with a global endemic because globalization and automation and, you know, the approach that we have now and the ability we have to be in several different places at once, the demands on our bodies to do that, the mind just hasn't been trained fast enough to be able to deal with that. So we do have to educate systems and trainable skills into how to deal with transient lifestyle. And transient lifestyle for an athlete is pretty huge. But not only that, the physical over-sciencing demands. You know, so I often will say to, you know, audiences when I speak, I say, you know, we spend so much time going to personal trainers at the gym, over-sciencing various things that we want to find out to make our body perform faster and better, or perhaps to look differently, but we spend very little time saying, I need to train my mind to do the same thing. And this trainable system, we've now automated as well, and we're offering it, you know, in both forms, so that you can migrate through it and you can go through the trainable system and you can work with it for good. And then you can continue to work with it in an automated form if you need to. But I really believe that transitions and automation has put a pressure demand on our systemic world at the moment. And we see this combustion especially affecting athletes because of their use and their migratory patterns. They're often, as you said, working for several different organizations within a year to 2 years. We have a very strong belief throughout the culture of the Optimization Hub that optimization is where we're at. We're there to empower and to ensure that we deliver something that allows the athlete to carry on without being reliant on us. So we're not like the, you know, go to the whiz bang boom programs and, you know, you've got someone teaching awareness. We're not awareness teaching. We're actually going out there teaching skills so that we become unnecessary in terms of the intervention, and then we carry on with some of the things we have on our platform which can support the athlete and the sport itself, and they become ambassadors of it. So this is true learning happening.
You guys, so great. I want to thank you for all this incredible information. We could literally talk for hours. Grazie alla Thaik and Daniel Kulikowski from Optimization Hub. The website is theoptimizationhub.com. You can get their great information there. Daniel, grazie alla, thank you guys so much for the information today. I look forward to staying in touch and continuing this conversation as we move forward.
Hey, Jeff, can I add something there? I forgot to say that we're licensing into so many countries at the moment that we're looking for licensing partners globally. And we would love to come into Canada. We're going into the US. So if there are partners over in Canada who were looking for these trainable skills, we would love to be able to meet with people who could, you know, start to teach some of these programs up in Canada and through the US.
Yeah, no, great, absolutely. And there's great people out there I know that would love to do this, Graziella. So hopefully we can be a connector there as well. You guys, thank you so much for your time today. We'll look forward to staying in touch.
Love it. Thank you, Jeff.
You're amazing.
And there you go, everybody. A fantastic conversation with Graziella and Daniel from the Optimization Hub. Again, you could check out their great information. Theoptimizationhub.com is their website. And again, they're looking for connectors and representatives all around the globe as they reach out to help improve organizational performance and spread the word about optimization and the very, very special characteristic called resilience. This show is without question worthy of another listen. I'm going to grab my notebook, go back and listen to it. You can too. Go to crushperformance.com, hit the podcast button, and you can go back, get to all the Crush archives, and re-listen to this show and share it with your friends, family, workmates, your fellow coaches and executives, and we can all reap the benefits of spreading the good word. I have to thank Graziella and Daniel one more time for coming on. Coming up next week, everyone, another gigantic episode of Crush Performance. I'm really, really looking forward to this show as well. As we talk with James Kerr, the founding partner of organizational performance firm Fable and the author of the Crush must-read book, Legacy, what the All Blacks can teach us about the business of life. Staying true to our 2019 theme of organizational and individual performance, I don't think we could find a better place to go to learn about culture and organizational performance than inside the All Blacks. That's where we're going next week on Crush Performance, everybody. I hope you're there for this very, very important conversation with James Kerr. We'll talk to you then. Now get out there, everybody, get better, and we'll talk to you next time.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I am very happy to have him on Sitting Ringside, and that is the quintessential stud muffin, Joel Gertner.
Quintessential stud muffin happened, but long story short, I guess, is before, I guess, the bow tie and the neck brace. I had already, I think maybe starting summer, late summer of 96, there was one show we did in Reading, Pennsylvania at Body Slams Arena. Like a lot of places that are named like that, like a lot of the sportatoriums and whatever else, it was a silo. You know, it would, like, the ECW arena was originally a warehouse.
Right.
And this place was just a silo. And like a lot of those places, their nature, if you don't know, is that there's no air conditioning. There's no HVAC. So when it's cold outside, it's colder in a building. when it's hot outside, it's hotter in the building. So we had a summer show. I want to tell you, inside it was 127 degrees, but I'd probably be lying to you by about 5 or 10 on the wrong end, because I was already doing the cocky heel gimmick with the verbiage and everything. But I was wearing like a black suit, white shirt, red bow tie, doing the kind of evil, like the same way Fonzie was an evil referee kind of when he came in.
Right.
So I was kind of an evil ring announcer, but I was wearing the company colors to rub it in. I would wear the red with the white, with the black, with the white shirt. And because it was so hot, I remember asking, I think Todd Gordon, I asked if I could not wear the shirt that day. Kind of trying to be like a play on, like, I think maybe it had already happened on SNL that Chris Farley had did his bit with Patrick Swayze, you know, with the Chippendales bit. Something inspired me and made me think, you know, I'm not the most in shape guy as it is. I'm doing kind of a Rick Rude type gimmick, but I don't have a body like Rick Rude. Maybe if I take the shirt off, maybe it won't be better and funnier, but it won't be worse either, and it can't hurt. So I asked, and that's it, man. That's how I got the look that, like you said, like I still rock today.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.